Da-na-da-na-da-na. This is where the intro music goes. Da-na-da-na.
But, and this butt is a big butt.
Ooh, I cannot lie.
Yeah, I like big butts. Yeah. That is a hot take, my friend. hot take. Num, 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 num. I'll eat that, bro. Man, Cincy Stephen's going to get that.
What's up, everybody? You know what time it is. It is time once again for Grade A, a special edition of Grade A, as I have given Adam Kuhn the week off, and I am being joined by one of my partners on the big show, Nate Hale, my roommate in row five of the Bailey. He's going to join me today, and we're going to work through this lineup, and we're going to talk about another exciting, enthralling, and quite frankly, extremely boring and frustrating nil-nil draw at TQL. We're two for two in that regard, Nate. When are we going to sha-la-la in a regular season game?
Great question. Roommate was pretty good. That was I chuckled internally when you said that. But, yeah, man, I don't know, the first two, leaving a match in that fashion after having the better chances, again, second regular season home game in a row doing that, especially coming off the loss to Monterey on Thursday, man, it's just, it's a gut punch. It is absolutely gut punch. And I think I said this earlier today on Slack, we've become accustomed to winning. And when you become accustomed to winning, you expect to win. And when you are the better team and you don't get outplayed and you walk away without a win, it makes it that much more, I guess, apparent, for lack of a better word. So, yeah, man, just leaving unsatisfied.
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, there's a lot of pressure on the team. I think to your point, the fan base, especially a lot of the people that jumped on, you know, maybe a third to halfway through the year last year where TQL really became like must-see TV. So coming out and not scoring in front of the home crowd, you know, kind of struggling in that doesn't help things, but it was a weird vibe in the game, you know, mid-afternoon kickoff. I think a lot of people thought it started at 4 instead of at 3. It was a late arriving crowd, would be the best way to describe it, but it ended up filling in the end. But I don't know, the energy the first two games has just been a little off. I think the highlight was that it was Kids Day. I mean, talk to me about your impression of Kids Day. I was thoroughly impressed. The girl that did the anthem, like, bring her back. I think kids should sing the anthem every week.
I'm down. That's actually a great idea. And pulling the sword, little man that pulled the sword, killed him. Absolutely killed
exactly.
him. Yeah, man, that was great. And, you know, the club does a pretty decent job, ironically, I'm going to say community. But the club typically leans into Cincinnati's community pretty well, and Kids Day is a great idea. Did I be okay if we had a themed match every match at home, as long as it doesn't, you know, supersede the match itself? Yeah, let's have some fun, let's lean into Cincinnati. It's ultimately what got us here, but yeah, Kids Day was awesome, man. The national anthem, as you said, was great. Little man pulling the sword was great. You know, the Bailey embraced it.
The kid doing the PA, doing the player announcements.
Yep. He did a nice job. And credit to those three. Me at my age, at that age, like, I probably would have been nervous as shit. And if they were, they didn't show it.
Especially the one pulling the sword, man. He was fired up.
He loved it, man. He embraced it. So Kids Day was cool. Hopefully it's a staple going forward. I'm sure we did it last year, but I didn't remember it last year. I absolutely remember it this year. So, yeah. It was but to your point, with the ambiance in the stadium, late arriving crowd, it's like we're at like 60-70% as a fan base in TQL right now. And maybe that's just because we've had two day games and we haven't had the normal run up that we're so used to from last year with all the 7:30 Saturday night starts, and things have been a bit different this year. I mean, it wasn't bad. We got some sunshine. When the sun went away, it was a little chilly, but I had a coworker that sat on the opposite side of the stadium in the shade.
And no thank you.
Dude, he said the entire match, that entire section, was just jealous of the Bailey getting the sunshine. And I was like, yeah, man, we weren't even cold. Like, it felt great.
Yeah, wait until it's July and it's 92 degrees and we're going to be praying for shade.
Saturday night matches. We'll be back. So
let's hope.
Let's talk about the underwhelming performance and some of the boys that we love. I'll let you give the scores tonight as we're switching gears, but we'll kind of walk through it back to front as you and Mr. Kuhn typically do. So obviously nil-nil draw. Statistically, the match itself, we had better possession, more big chances. I mean, I wouldn't say we dominated, but we were the better squad, just like Thursday versus Monterey, and yet we leave without capitalizing. So we'll start at the back. The man that got the shutout, FCC's man of the match, one Roman Celentano. Break him down for me.
Yeah, well, I will tell you right out of the gate, I did not agree with who the man of the match was. I did not give it to Roman. He honestly didn't have a lot to do, and I asked Adam about this last week on it. Like, are we going to unfairly judge him because he's not going to be put under pressure very often? I think when it was all said and done, finished with four saves. Three of them, I believe, were shots that were from outside the box right at him. His best save of the game was probably in the 20th minute. Had to parry it away, dove and parried it away, I believe, to his right. That was really the most threatening shot on target. There were a couple of other times where DC got in and just skied the ball right over the net. But, you know, the same things that plague Roman were again evident in this game. 7 of 14 on his long passes. Like, again, I don't know that we miss Brandon Vasquez that much, but apparently we do. But I will say, to on the other end of that, even though his long passing was poor, he threw the ball more out, it seemed to me, than he has in any other game, meaning getting it, running up, you know, immediately releasing it with a long throw or a mid-range throw. I'd really like to see him develop that side of his game. But when you add it all up, you get a shutout. I got to give him some credit for that. Didn't really have to make a lot of great saves, so I gave him a 6.5.
I would second the accurate long balls. As the clock was winding down, he had a ball trying to force it downfield, and my man punted it right out of bounds.
yes, he did.
And it was like, Rome, come on, man. Of all the things, we got to keep possession here if we're going to give ourselves a chance to win. And he knew it. I mean, you kind of saw his reaction. You mentioned the passing, the throws, if you will, the long throws. Man, I don't want to be a homer, but give Rome some David Raya footage and say, mm-hmm. Hey, man, like, if you get the ball off a set piece, and granted, the rest of the team has to be ready for it, but man, release somebody down the left or right flank and just chuck it. You know, you've already got your defense back. You're not outnumbered at that point. Just, you can outnumber them. And I haven't seen us do that once in Rome's and really entire career. I don't know that FCC's ever done that from a keeper. If you want to build from the back, great. But sometimes you just need to throw caution to the wind strategically and put the ball back in play and just send it. And to your point, we haven't done that. His long passing doesn't really allow us to do that. I don't know at this point in his career, and I know he's still young, but how you really truly improve upon that without just, man, repetition. Yep. And man,
I got to do it in game settings too.
Yeah, and that's kind of mind-numbing practice, but man, the great ones do, and for him to really step his game to that next level, that's what he'll need. More often than not, his shot stopping ability is great. It's the best on the squad. It's the best we've had in orange and blue. Cool. But yeah, man, I think his distribution kind of limits us. So I'm right there with you. You said 6.5. I was 7 just because it's a shutout, but I'm not going to, argue over half a point. So we'll move to the back line. A good 3 at the back with Miles, Miazga, and his name is Kip Keller. And I'll let you sing that if you want later. Your new man crush, that's a conversation for a later date and time. But we'll start with Miles. Miles was what, the right center back in the pairing? So we'll start with Miles. Seemed to have a good match, but elaborate on that.
Yeah, no, I thought once again he was solid in what he was asked to do. The biggest thing of any of the center backs, he was the most involved, I guess, in, I'll call it, clearances and blocks, right? Whatever you want to call those defensive actions, right? So he had 4 blocks, and he ended with 6 clearances, which put him just ahead of both Matt and Kip. He was the best, I guess, keeping possession for Miles. Like, his game is very calm. His ability to make a mid-range pass, I think, is probably a little bit better than Miazga's and obviously better than Keller's. His passing finished okay. He struggled with long balls. This is going to be a theme for the entire defense. Only 2 of 7 in long passes or long balls being completed. And, you know, we would get the ball, and I don't want to say we would give it right back, but we would essentially give it right back to him. So not in a dangerous position, but again, just unable to sort of break those lines using the ball to do the work. So, yeah, I mean, it's another solid performance from a solid professional. I gave him a 7.
Yeah, pretty spot on. I'd agree with the score. Miles, if anything, I think Miles has the best positional awareness, and yeah. Miazga's a very close second. I think that's a veteran and a very experienced center back in the sense that they know when to get the ball out of trouble. Like, sometimes it's just best to clear it. Yeah, you could play it to the midfield. You could play it to an outside back. But sometimes it's just best to send it down the field and reset. And Miles does a really good job of that. So I would agree with the 7. You know, nothing, I guess nothing crazy outstanding, but a solid match overall. So yeah. We mentioned Miazga. We'll move to the middle. Another good match from Matt. You know, it's been interesting with Miles and even Kip, who's been a little bit more vocal this year in the, you know, the first two really league home matches that we've had that we've seen him play. But yeah, talk me through Miazga's game. Anything that kind of stood out to you there?
Yeah. So to your point, I think Miazga and Robinson sort of had mirror games of each other. And what I mean by that is they're both just professional games. Like, they put a shift in, they kept a clean sheet. Matt obviously is in charge of keeping the back line organized. He was the best passer of the three, completing 84%, but guess where he lost it? You know, long balls again, 5 of 11 on long passing. So only 45%. So you take that up even just 3 more completed passes, and now we're able to kind of keep the ball moving, keep possession, you know, transition into offense a little bit more smoothly. I thought he was pretty solid in the back. As I mentioned, he finished behind Robinson as far as clearances go. He had 4. The one time that he was really exposed was right after halftime coming out. He got beat pretty bad over the top, and Keller had to come sliding in, and whoever it was for DC, I think it might have been Dejomi, if that's how you say it, whoever their forward is, had got in back behind him, and he skied it right over, but basically caught Matt flat-footed. He did his best to recover, but Kip kind of had to come over and help him out. But other than that, I thought he was solid all the way around, not spectacular. Long passing hurt him. I gave him a 6.5.
Yeah, again, as mediocre as the match was as a whole, the back line was solid. You used the word professional. They were. We'll see that a lot this year, which is a great thing. Like, I'm soaked for it. It's better when you put the ball in the back of the net against the opposition. Then you can just have the professional back line and things are easy. But yeah, Matt had a decent game. That one moment, that was the one thing that stuck out to me as well. You know, he usually doesn't get beaten. He knew he was beaten. That's kudos to the man we'll talk about next and Kip Keller. So we'll slide right over to the left center back. I'll say this before you dive into it. I know, like, I jokingly say he's your man crush.
Yeah.
Dude, like, what the fuck was Austin thinking? how is this man just the forgotten man that's coming to Cincy? Credit to Albright for getting him the way he did for basically pennies on the dollar. But man, like, Kip in these first few matches as a player that's still growing into the league, and I'm thoroughly impressed. So I'll let you talk about Kip, his game, and his score, and his barking at the back line.
Yes, his barking. I will say this. You know, I'll pump the brake. Kip. He doesn't do a lot of stuff really, really well. But and I hate to be cliche with the whole Cincinnati. You know, they love guys that hustle. You know, I'm just going to say it. You know, any guy that works really hard. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he becomes. But he does become a fan favorite, and I think it's because he has absolute no regard for his body and well-being. And yeah. I think that's what I like most about him, because honestly, his passing isn't particularly great. He finished this game 76%. He was by far the busiest person. He had the most touches on the team. I finished the game with 91 touches. Now, some people will say a lot of that stuff is side to side to Miazga. I mean, our pattern of play is he's going to play the ball up to Luka. If Luka doesn't have anything, he's going to play it back to Kip. Kip's going to cycle it over to Matt. So he was on the ball a lot. I think we were purposely trying to attack up the left-hand side, and I'll talk more about that when we get to Oriano. But, you know, 91 touches, 76% passing, which isn't great. He, too, struggled on long passing, 4 of 12 for 33%. But where he did not struggle, Nate, duels. 14 duels won, including 12 out of 14 in the air. Like, he lapped Miazga and Robinson as far as aerial duels. He beat the two of them combined, both in the number that he faced and the number that he won. And I think that's what I like most about him is, you know, you mentioned, or I mentioned, and you alluded to when he came over to help Miazga, like he's just throwing himself in front of shots. Somebody I saw posted on Facebook, of all places, don't hold it against me. I was going in to see what ridiculous things had been said. But somebody had put on there like
slippery slope.
Exactly. But somebody had said like there's a magnet on him and the ball just like he's taken more shots to his body on shots than probably anybody else on the team. Again, just throwing himself in front of shots, just trying to be disruptive. But in the air, he's been really, really good. He had a couple of chances on corners that he wasn't able to connect with. That'll come. But I the effort that he puts in, a lot of that is because his positioning isn't great. His passing isn't great. That'll come. He's still an extremely young player and didn't get a lot of minutes last year. So overall, though, another what I would call vintage Kip Keller performance, if I can say that after two MLS match days. But I gave him a 7.5.
Hard to argue anything you said. I'm going to run down some stats real quick just from a center back stat line, which, you know, again, like you said, the ball seems to find him. That could be good or bad, depending on how you look at it. But 1 blocks, 4 clearances, 3 headed clearances, and 6 recoveries. I'm going to say something I know a couple weeks ago Kuhn mentioned, you know, Kubo led the team in recoveries. There's a reason for that. Every time Kuhn kept alluding to that, there's a reason for that. Teams tend to attack your weakest side. That's sure. Just going to give that player the most opportunity to then have recoveries. That's kind of how that works. But yeah, man, Kip looked great. Caution to the wind is spot on. The man is, you know, kamikaze Kip, if you want to use that.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I just say Kip Keller is a bad mother, you know.
Yeah, but kamikaze Kip, he just kind of sends himself, you know, without regard to his own body, as you said. So, hey, man, I'm spot on. I gave him a 7. The passing got to get a little bit better. Got a little bit more creative.
Some go of ahead. That too is a couple of players need to help him out a little bit.
Yes, more. Yes, and that's maybe that comes with chemistry. Again, we're a couple matches in. New player to the squad playing. I mean, ironically, like who's he's playing to another new player on the left. And then the midfield.
Everything's new on the left. You got Puka to, you know, inside to his right, and you've got Luka outside to his left.
Yeah. So, you know, all things considered, I think the ceiling is very high for Kip, especially as this team progresses over the next few years. And I am extremely glad that he's here. So we'll move to the quote unquote midfield. I don't know that I agree with the wing backs as midfielders, but, you know. If that's how the diagram is drawn up, that's how the diagram is drawn up.
We'll follow the line, baby.
Yeah, we'll stay on that left side. Luca Oriano, without getting too much into his personal stuff, man, glad he's back. I'm glad he's got match fitness, and I'm glad mentally he was in a good place to start a match and really play the entire match. So talk me through his game. The man is very good on the ball. Mm-hmm. The man is fearless, and... Mm-hmm. I think is if you compare to where, and it's there's going to be comparisons. It's just the nature of the beast. Where Barrial was to where he was this early in his career, playing a left wing back role, man. Like Oriano, in my opinion, grain of salt, and maybe recency bias plays a little bit of a role here, but I think he's light years ahead of where Barrial was 2 matches into the left wing back experience. But talk me through it.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think where Barrial's starting point was definitely further behind than where Luka is. And I think that speaks to the ceiling on Luka being higher, quite frankly, than it was for Alvaro. So yeah, his passing was spectacular. Finished at 83%, 40 out of 48. Created two chances. In the beginning of the game, I think about the 23rd minute, he played a ball across to Corey Baird, who once again, like, just missed it, just missed the slide tap-in, and then had another one at the end of the first half where basically he did it all himself, 1v1, ended up trying to fire the ball across the face of the goal, but Bono put it, you know, smothered it. We thought it went out for a corner, but apparently it did not. So it was a really good moment for him, though, because you speak about his fearlessness. Now, he did have 88 touches, which was second on the team to Keller. So I think there was a concerted effort to try to attack down the left-hand side. I think that's as much because Luka is just a natural talent as it is that, you know, the Alves Pal experience can be a runaway train sometimes. Five of eight on successful dribbles. Again, speaking to the guy's fearlessness, he wants to take guys on. Five passes in the final third. The only thing I'm going to critique him about is he was dispossessed four times. But if you're on the ball a lot and you're trying to make things happen, it's just going to happen naturally. He was on the ball a lot. And those 10 recoveries, probably largely because the teams are going to attack that left-hand side and see if he can defend, because he didn't come over with a great defensive reputation. But I thought that he acquitted himself well enough, close to 50% on his ground duels won. We'll take what we can get out of that. I gave him a 7.5, and he was my man of the match.
Nice. He would be my second, you know, if I my first choice, if not for the man of the match. But I don't disagree with anything you say, as he's going to grow into this role. Man, like, again, the sky's the limit. I love watching him play. There's certain players when they get on the ball. Lucha's one of them. Boop's one of them. You know, in the past, Brenner's been one of them. Like, you just get excited. You feel more confident that something can happen from this run of play with the ball at his feet. And there's not a lot of players, and really on any team. I mean, anybody with DC, they've got one guy maybe at best that you know, as an easy comparison that have that, and that's Clich. But yeah, man, like, Luka played great.
Clich was really good in this game too.
He's a Premier League player. You know, his experience is about second to none of anybody in the league. He's been through the English Championship, and he's played at the top tier in the Premier League with Leeds. So, but yeah, man, Luka. Hell of a game, all things considered, especially coming back. 7.5 is my score for him. I love to watch him grow, and I'm going to love to watch him kind of progress with his skill set. So, moving to the midfield, we'll get to my man of the match, Pavel Buka. And I'll elaborate on why, but talk me through his game as the birthday boy becomes more comfortable here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was a close race for this. And I'll tell you why he wasn't my man of the match when I finished, because I think he had a very Junior Moreno type performance, if that's fair. A fair comparison.
That's
fair.
That's actually a really good comparison, yeah.
Yeah, 95% passing. He was smart with the ball. 4 of 6 on successful dribbles, so being able to receive in the midfield and carry forward. 4 passes in the final third, 2 of 2 on long balls, 7 of 10 on his ground, duels. Like, did all the dirty work that a Junior Moreno does. The only reason I didn't give him higher than what I gave him is because we need him to be an offensive threat out of the midfield. And he just didn't find it in this game. He didn't find those areas. He had one shot, which was kind of a half chance. Ball came to him.
Can I hit you with something?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
How long was Obi on the field?
Obi was on the field I got it right here. Let's see. Pinto played 58 minutes. Obi was there for 32 minutes.
That's all I got to say. Continue.
Okay, fair enough. So, yeah, I mean, again, I thought this was probably his best game. He was really good, like, in the middle of the field. He does need to help out a little bit more. Like, I want him to have a few more touches, and he probably could have helped Keller out a little bit. He's got to get comfortable playing in that triangle with Luka and Lucho. I don't think that's really his sauce, is not his strong point, right? And you got to have some sauce to play in that triangle sometimes.
Yeah, that's a fact, yeah.
But I think that comes with time around Luka and time around Lucho. Like, It's the second game. You know what I mean? Like, this is the problem when you say we're used to winning and we're used to being like, there's still five new starters on this team. And so I look at where Pavel is and how far he's come just in the first few weeks, a couple of weeks of the season. And I couldn't be more excited to see eventually what his finished product's going to be. For this one, I ended up giving him a 7. And again, the only reason I didn't bump him up to that 7.5 or maybe a little bit higher is because I want more from him as that late runner. I want more from him as that person that's going to be willing to take that shot. And he just didn't have it. He didn't have the opportunities, and he didn't take advantage of the ones that he had in this game as much as I thought he should have.
I gave him a 7.5 as well. A little bit higher than you, but to the point of the man of the match, I think given the fact that Pinto came in when he came in, given the fact that...
I mean, don't disrespect Pinto.
No, Pinto, I mean...
But yes, I understand.
You could make an argument Pinto was man of the match given the circumstance and the way he played.
He's no Obi,
but all things considered, it didn't look that different. Yeah, and that might be given the opposition and what they had in their attacking prowess, not having Benteke. But at that, like, yeah, Pavel on the ball, man. Like, anytime you're 95% passing in the midfield, pretty solid. He did track back much better in terms of just his ability. I think he had, what, eight recoveries?
Eight recoveries, yeah. So, I mean, he was up near the lead. He was second highest on the team behind Luka.
And again, I alluded to playing down the weaker side. The opposition is going to play against your weaker side. But yeah, with that, man, like, it's, you know, a quick progression from really the first few matches. And we can count CCC in that. But really, one game versus Monterrey, which is top-tier competition, we'll leave, you know, Cavalier out of it to the extent of really anything more than a practice match. But yeah, Pavel looked the part. He looked dangerous. And this is going to sound really corny, and this is something that maybe I've noticed. This is a Facebook thing for me, but it's not so much a thing, but just something I'm aware of. I'll never gripe on a player thanking the fans, but the first player to come to the Bailey, all of our home matches so far, has been Pavel Buka.
Well, that's good, because I've left immediately at the end.
You have bounced, but man, like 30, 45 seconds later... Yeah, he's there. I mean, I think Pavel has a chance to really have this fan base fall in love with him as he grows and as he grows into his skill set. The true jack of all trades. That as much as I love Junior and appreciate everything he accomplished here and did here, I think Pavel has that next tier.
Yeah, so, I think the ceiling is higher. One thing I do want to mention too, because this was actually another reason why I kind of docked him a little bit, is if you remember, right before the end of the first half, he got the ball just basically straight taken off of him by Klitsch. And he took that shot from about 20 yards out that he ended up putting it over the bar, but you can't give the ball up in that position. Like, it was a clean look. Like, that's the kind of ball I want him to win. And take that shot, right? So, yeah, I mean, still not 100% clean defensively, but still a really good progressor of the ball in this one.
We'll move on to Obi. And I know you and Mr. Kuhn typically wait for the subs, but very rarely do we have a sub, you know, 35 minutes in, give or take. So, Obi, I mean, there's not much to say. I'll kind of take this one in the sense that it's apparently a leg contusion. The man was, we were on the opposite side of the field in the Bailey because it happened on that opposite side. But I didn't see anything crazy that happened. He just kind of went down during a set piece and just, you know, 3 minutes later, he's leaving the pitch.
Yeah, remember, he got injured on a foul that was called on him, I want to say 5 or 10 minutes prior to that, right? He was running across the field. It looked like he actually got kicked by the DC player. I didn't watch the replay of it. And then he was down for a while. And then tried to stay in and then eventually ended up coming out. So, yeah. So all they're saying right now is that it's a leg contusion.
Yeah. Hopefully it's nothing major. You know, maybe he's out. I mean, sucks, but he'll probably be out in Mexico at Monterrey.
I don't know. Put the magic spray on it, baby.
Just
get that blood flowing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's going to be telling to how we approach that match, and not to get too much off on a tangent or change the subject. But, You know, are we going for it or are we not? What's more important is the longevity of the season in league play or CCC? And I know Albright and Noonan both said they want to win everything, but man, OB's a major cog in the wheel, and it'll say a lot if we risk him. And maybe it was something minor, and we're just, you know, we're not aware of it, and he's fine. But we'll.
I'm sure it had to hurt in the moment. So yeah. For him to come off because he's a warrior. So
he is.
But yeah, I didn't because he only played the 30 minutes. I didn't give him a rating, but when he was playing, he was doing pretty damn well. His passing was good. Was getting on the ball. Wasn't really great on his tackles, was just 1 of 4 when he went out. So I'll shift over to Pinto, who really came in and put in a really good shift for that 58 minutes or 60 minutes that he was in. So decent passing, 76%, I think, when it was all said and done. So, you know, not spectacular. I would like to see him up a little bit higher. But again, was doing the defensive work, had 7 recoveries in there, 5 duels won. All of those were ground duels. He was 5 of 8. Deputizing for Obi probably is the best way to put it. The best thing I can say about Pinto is you didn't notice Obi was in there, wasn't in there. So yeah. I give Malik high marks for that. I ended up giving him a 6.5 as a result. And yeah, I thought those are those emergency minutes you get out of a guy, but he comes in, he's calm. He looks like he's been there before. He was in the flow of the game. And again, the biggest compliment is, Obi is a special breed, obviously, a special player, but I wasn't like, holy crap, we're getting pulled apart in the midfield now because Obi's not there. So,
yeah,
good job.
I was 1 tick higher to 7, and I guess that's, I mean, if I'm going straight off stats, yeah, 6.5, but to come in there as a 21-year-old, you know, in that match at home, as you said, you really didn't notice that Obi was truly not in the match. The team didn't look that much different. Those are the marginal things that makes Obi that much better and that much more special. Yeah, man, Pinto, again, credit to the staff and just to kind of see him grow. You know, if I were to guess that Pinto would be playing this way at his age with the limited time he's really had with the first team, I probably would have said not so fast, my friend. But, yeah, I gave him a 7. It's good to have that depth and to watch a player that we do care about and one of our own to grow into that depth. So
I agree.
We'll move to the opposite side. One Alvis Powell. man, as you said, the Alvis Powell experience. At least we know what we're going to get. You know, that's
you do.
I love it, but man, it's trying to think of a good analogy. It's...
I don't know. He's like a train wreck. You just got to watch. You're just waiting for it to happen.
I don't know that the wreck's going to happen, but
he's the Tasmanian devil.
Yeah. He's the runaway train that you're hoping that somebody, you know, climbs from each car to the front to slow it down at the very end.
Right.
Cause defensively, man, like I don't have a whole lot of complaints. And I love Alvis. That's the thing that's so frustrating, man. I think I've grown to the point where, you know, kind of like the Ray Gattis experience over the past couple of years, a player who really rarely did anything going forward, man. I just want Alvis to have that banger that I'm going to reference it, even though it hurts me to do it, that Vincent Kompany banger for those that know that, like, man, I did not see that coming. Yeah, man, give me your thoughts on Alvis on this match, a typical Alvis Powell experience match, but fill me in a little bit more.
Yeah, I think one of the most telling things is that he had 40 less touches than Luka. Excuse me. So if that tells you anything about, you know, where we were trying to attack from, obviously it was heavily slanted to the left side of the field. But, you know, Alvis, 3 of 4 successful dribbles. He's never met a defender that he is afraid to take on. And to his credit, he did more often than not. But he was dispossessed 3 times. So with the ball, just getting it taken off of him. Did a good job defensively, like you said. He had a moment in this match where they played a ball into him at the top of the box, and he just wouldn't pull the trigger. And he had one other shot that he took near post that Bono had to make a save on, or at least knocked it out of bounds. I think that was a good take by him. But the one that he passed up is the one that I want back. And it's, you know, again, he had received it, I want to say, right around the top of the box and just kind of held up instead of just taking it in. Because, again, I said this, I think they're scared to shoot when Lucho is near the ball, and I don't think that's healthy, and I'll talk more about that when I get to Lucho probably, but you know, his passing's never going to be great. He was 65% for the game, and like I said, he had that one shot from out wide towards the end of the half, but that ball that he sat on and he should have shot, that's the one that eats at me. I ended up giving him a 6.5 because, again, defensively he does what you ask him to do. It's just offensively, just like one time, I just want him to complete one of those crazy ass runs to somebody and get rewarded for the effort more than anything. Right. And I'd like to just see him like, yeah, dude, don't be afraid to put it in the 35th row. It's not going to be the first time. It won't be your last. Just like let it fly when you're open. So I gave him a 6.5.
So this is kind of corny, but Elvis's middle name, do you know it off the top of your head?
Elvis, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Elvis, yeah.
I want a little bit more Elvis and a little less Alvis. whatever that means, I think it fits and spot on. I gave him a 6, man. Again, I love Alvis. He's, you know, a company man, as they say. But yeah, mm-hmm. I'm with you, man. Just we know what we're gonna get, and it's great transition into Lucho. I don't know why this team feels the need to have Lucho touch the ball every time they do something offensively. Granted, the man leads the league in you know, chances created at this point with 15. But if you look at each match and you dissect it, I think a little bit of that is that by truly by design. And I don't
it's
know if
like
that's
recoveries. It's like recoveries.
Yeah.
It's
I don't know if that's Lucho based or if that's Noonan based. Probably a little bit of both, but yeah, man, I gave Alvis a 6. Solid performance. Can't say anything really bad about him. I just wanted to be a little bit more aggressive. He takes on those dribbles. He takes on the opposition and he'll drive 30, 40 yards down the pitch to then like just the candle goes out. It's like, damn it. We were so close. Alvis just either just right. Send it or put the ball into the box so aggressively that somebody has to make a play, whether it's an own goal, a deflection, or a clearance, because ultimately it's going to be the same result. So, yeah, that's my take on Alvis, but we'll move to Lucho. You know, another solid performance by Lucho. Another performance where I think he's trying to do a little too much, and that's good and bad. But yeah, talk me through Lucho's game and really to him this point into the season.
Yeah, so in this one in particular, I think when you come onto the field and your strikers are Santos and Baird, it's kind of on your shoulders to make things happen. And, you know, the game actually didn't really start off very well for him. I just felt like we weren't able to get him on the ball too much. We were having a hard time in really that first 20, 25 minutes just really getting anything going. I think I said to you, you know, like around the 30th, 35th minute is when the game kind of woke up and Lucho maybe woke up a little bit more. At the end of the day, you know, 3 chances created. He has 10 touches in the opponent's box, which leads the team. Some of that, though, you know, were those touches necessary? 5 of 10 on dribbles. He's always going to take people on. The thing that frustrated me about this is we're getting demonstrative Lucho, which I know he's pressing. He's pressing because, let's be honest, both this Toronto and DC game, we should have won both these games. We were the better team on the field. We had the better chances. We're just off a tick. And I'm sure he has high standards. I'm sure he wants to get these. He wants to get these points. He knows how important it is. The simulation yellow he took was terrible. You know, diving for that. But the biggest thing in the 70 something minute, like a terrible misplayed ball right to him. He's in on goal and like. He didn't even put it on frame. He just drug it wide. Like, that was a huge chance in this game. That is a ball last year that he finishes 10 out of 10 times. Like, so to me, that just shows, like, he's pressing. He's pressing. He's trying to make too much happen. He needs to just let it fly a little bit. But at the same time, like, I'll apologize for him a little bit, too, because who's he working with? He's working with guys that he hasn't worked with for a full year, right? You've got Baird, which is a new forward. You've got Orellano on the outside, who is not Alvaro Barrial, who he was extremely close with. You've got Buca in behind him. You don't have Junior Moreno, who he had a good playing relationship. I'm sure off the field they were good too. So, like, if anyone has been most affected by the changes in the starting lineup, it's probably been Lucho more than anyone, because it's all the players around him that have been replaced. I mean, one guy basically on the back line left, and then it's all, you know, it's all four new offensive players, right? It's, yeah, essentially it's four offensive players. So, you know, it was a game that I'm sure that he would tell you that he was pissed that we didn't score in. He was part of that because he missed a big chance. But overall, I mean, I gave him a 7. He's still out there making things happen, but we're just not quite there yet, but we'll get there. Again, it's the second home game, you know, fourth game of the season. Like, I'm not, you know, it's a long, I remember from last year, it is a long ass season. And I put this out there too. If we, regardless of what happens in CCC, if we go and we win at the Revs, which right now Caleb Porter might not survive the first half of the season and they're a mess, but if we can do that, we've essentially done what the script says, which is 3 points at home, ties on the road. We've just flipped it, and we'll have 2 road wins and 2 ties at home. So to me, that bode wells going forward. I think Lucho gets better as the season goes on, but for this one, I gave him a 7.
Yeah, I'd give him the same 7. You know, the reigning MVP, I think that plays, has to play a little bit in the back of his mind, you know, as a first-time MVP winner, and that's the expectation. I'm sure that's the expectation, if not a little bit higher, that he set for himself. I think we are seeing the difference between trying too hard, Lucho, and I'm out here having fun, Lucho. And a lot of the goals he scored last year were, I'm having fun. Like, a little bit of caution to the wind, but I know on my skill set, like the goal away at Vancouver, when that little chip in to win the game, and what, I mean, he didn't play the majority of the match, came out as a late sub. That was having fun, Lucho. His goal in Atlanta when Moreno played the header back down to his feet, and he left Guzan standing there like a dipshit. Like, that's having fun, Lucho. Even I think it was it Chicago when he hit the
Chicago.
Outside of the post, he was having fun, Lucho. I don't know if that's him pressing because we're at home. I don't know, man. I just, you know, maybe he needs a shot of tequila or something before the first, you know, before the ball starts moving around on the pitch to kind of give him that.
I think what he needs is just more time on the field with Pavel and Luka and you know, another forward that can finish that is not named Sergio Santos.
Yeah, that's fair too. But I gave him a 7. You know, I'm right there with you. I think maybe that's a little unfair and not a 7.5 or even an 8. You could probably stretch that with just the chances created. But I'm not worried. You know, there's a lot of people like, oh, he's doing this, that, or the other, and there's some idiotic speculation.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen Lucho long enough to know that that's his person.
And if Lucho's storming off the field pissed after playing 90 minutes, it's not because anything but him being mad at the final result. You know, we've seen Lucho storm off being subbed too early, you know, those things. But, man, he does give it his all. I will never question that, you know, with flair, with Argentinian flair. But, yeah, I gave him a 7. We'll move to the front two. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll start with Sergio. You know, there's not a ton to say. But, yeah, talk me through Sergio's game. He get the majority of the run. But, yeah. Fill me in there.
Right. The fact that a guy played almost 60 minutes and your first thing is there's not a lot to say, that's all you need to know about the game Sergio Santos plays. Here's my thing. If you're a speed merchant and you can't run in behind a defense, then you're not a speed merchant. And he has no, like, man, he is becoming the one that all of the focus is being, all the ire of the fan base is directed towards. But I'm not going to say it's not without reason. Like, to me, he's useless is a really bad word, but he's not creating anything. He doesn't finish anything. He gets like Boop in 30 minutes had more touches than Santos did in an hour. And Santos had no chances created, no shots. So he got a 3 because like, I'm serious, man. Like, he got a 3. It was, he's just like, he's not as fast. He is definitely,
he's lost
100% a step. Either that or he can't run against guys that are fresh.
That could be it too because we're seeing him. Man, that's weird though. Like beginning of last year, he came out of the. He was our leading goal scorer for the first five or six matches. Right. But he looked fast. He looked dangerous. He doesn't look dangerous right now.
No,
and I don't know if that's a physicality thing. I don't know if that's a new teammate thing. But yeah, man. Like when you look at his stat line, there, like meh. Like there's really not much to say. Like passing,
there's nothing there.
6 of 9 accurate passes. The man played 60 minutes and he made 9 passes. Right. You know, expected assist against, and we had the better possession the entire match for the most part. The first 20 minutes or so were a little rough, but after that, so he had 40 minutes of us having primary possession, 17 touches.
Yeah, one touch really, in the opponent's box. One.
Like just, there's just not a lot there. And I don't think it's an effort thing. It could be a little bit of a chemistry thing. It could be a little bit of the way he's being used. I think it's safe
to say that he's just not good anymore.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say at this point in Sergio's career, and I hate saying about a 29-year-old that's, you know, not necessarily out of his prime, but he is your super sub. You mentioned like against fresh defenders, he's best utilized as I use the term kamikaze Keller, kamikaze Santos, that last 20 minutes, 15 minutes, if you need a goal or you need somebody to stretch the field, that's been his MO. And now we're trying to use him a little bit differently, and it's just simply not working. It's a forward that the opposition really doesn't have to worry too much about, that if he beats you, you're okay with him beating you. And that's
right.
That's
he doesn't occupy he doesn't occupy any defenders.
He really doesn't, man. Like you can kind of lay off of him, and again, if he beats you, okay, I'm okay with that. Like if I'm gonna lay off against anybody on this team right now, it's sadly Santos, and that's tough criticism, but I think it's warranted given his stat line and given his impact. And you know, maybe that's just because, you know, Boop's still kind of quasi coming back from an injury, or we're saving him for Monterey. Or we just really don't have the depth right now. And I know we're rumored to still be on the market. You know, Bogart said something on his little, you know, YouTube show the other day that, you know, we're still on the market, but we need to move some pieces to have that happen. And there's a very real chance that our front four is Boop, Baird, Santos, and Datto. And at this point, I think it's safe to say, man, and I'll buy Boop and Datto dinner if they want to go build some chemistry. Because right now, going forward, it's tough. So it's sadly an easy transition. I didn't give our boy Santos a 3, but I gave him a 5. but you know, recency.
I had to
bias.
Do something controversial. Yeah,
right. But we'll move over to Baird. Dear Lord, man, just put the ball in the net.
He's close, man.
He's
close.
So close. It's so frustrating. Like, yeah. The head and hands moment has now become the Corey Baird moment so far this year, in the sense that, like, I thought that was in, and now I'm looking up at the sky wondering how that didn't go in. I know he's doing the same. I've seen him do it. Positionally, he gets into the right spots. The finishing is creative, but not quite creative enough. But yeah, talk me through Corey's game. I think he's going to be a staple going forward. We didn't sign him as a free agent for him not to be, but talk me through his game, and we'll wrap this up with a few subs after that.
Yeah, no, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. He does a lot of the off the ball stuff well. He puts himself in good positions, but the finishing touch just isn't there. He had a chance at the end of the first half that was basically point blank, and he didn't really necessarily hit it well, on top of the fact that he hit it sort of right at Bono, whatever his name is. But
sure.
And then there was the other chance that was played across, you know, and for the second time, I think a sliding tap in that he just missed. But, you know, he's frustrating to the extent that he hasn't put it in the back of the net, but you can see why they would want to bring him over. Because again, I do think that he puts himself in goal scoring positions. He just hasn't done it yet. And I'm not going to throw the towel in on a guy that has played 3 games, 4 games. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay. It's okay. Like, there's, again, continuity and chemistry is something that's going to happen. Knowing how to time the runs, knowing the pace of the ball as it's coming across, how players like to play, you know, like, even you talk about playing with a player out wide like Oriano, like, what's the bend on his ball? What can you expect from him? Like, where does he want you to run? How accurate is he going to be with that? Like, they'll learn that over time, and he'll know where to be. He's smart. He's a pro. So I'm not too worried about it. Again, probably if he finishes, we've got 4 extra points because we probably beat both Toronto and DC. But the reality is he didn't, but I still gave him a 6.5. It wasn't a terrible performance. It wasn't great, but you're putting yourself in positions to be dangerous. You just got to be dangerous when the ball comes to you. But yeah, 6.5.
I gave him a 6 just for not finishing. But
yeah,
you
that's
know, the XGs were there, you know,
yeah.
.80. He's, if anybody going forward, really, yesterday, sadly it was yesterday, it feels weird saying about a Sunday match, but he was probably your most dangerous attacker. All things considered, him and Lucho combined, and maybe Oriano was a third. But yeah, so I gave him a 6. We already talked about Pinto was a sub. Other subs, is really anybody? I mean, we can talk about Datto a little bit, Yedlin a little bit. They did change the game.
Boop.
Yeah, I mean, without going through all those guys, I mean, we'll do this. I'll say something about what you saw when they came on. So we'll start with Yedlin on the back line.
Unspectacular.
Okay. I would say more comfortable on the ball and versus Alves, tight spaces. And Alves is great in tight spaces, but Alves's first inclination is either pass it immediately back or, you know, caution to the wind. There really isn't much in between. Yedlin, there's a little bit more decision making, and you see that calmness. So we'll move. Again, we already talked about Pinto. We'll move, let's see, down the line. Boop. I guess kind of Boop and Datto both up front, but what, you know, with Boop coming on,
and
he just doesn't look super confident right now. You know, a couple of the opportunities he's had have been just wide over the bar. He's had one or two howlers where you're like, man, that was nowhere near the back of the net. I don't know if something's off. I wouldn't say that or go as far to say that, but he just, the confidence might be lacking, or he knows that now more than ever, like, he's the man. And he's used to being the man, and, you know, his goal in CCC was great. But outside of that, there really hasn't been much there. But yeah, talk me through Boop a little bit.
Yeah, I think the whole I'm the man, I got to be the man is pretty valid. You can't, it's bad enough to miss once in front of the goal. You can't do it twice. And that's exactly what he did in the 84th minute. That ball came across. He couldn't control it off his chest. Like, that's, if you're a confident informed player, he takes that off his chest and volleys it right in. He wasn't able to do that. He kind of lost possession of it, but it came right back to him and he missed it again. So, like, you can't be the high dollar DP striker and miss that. Now, he had 23 touches in 34 minutes, and like Baird had 22 for as long as he was in, and Santos only had 17. So the game changes when he comes in, but he's got to finish. He's got to finish.
Yep. And then last but not least, the wunderkind, as they say. And Datto stock continues to rise. Noonan says, you know, he's earned the minutes. We see why. His little curler that just went wide of the right post, you know, late in the second half. Man, I thought that was in. Bono thought it was in. He kind of froze. And Datto continues to impress in very limited minutes. But yeah, any thoughts on him before we wrap it up?
No, I mean, a guy playing with confidence that's playing with joy. We said it about Lucho. Like, Datto plays like he's having fun. And as we stood there in this game, how many times did we say, just shoot the ball?
Yeah.
Like, Datto, hey, if I got it and I got a look, I'm pulling the trigger. And honestly, that's what we have to do more of. Like, dump it in there. Make the keeper make a save. Get a rebound. Get a cheap tap in. Something. But yeah, really good-looking shot. Ashamed he couldn't just shape it enough to get it in there. But yeah, young kid playing with a ton of confidence and absolutely like zero F's given. Like, I'm going out there, I'm going to make shit happen. Like, he's seizing his moments when he gets them, and that's what you want to see. You want young, hungry players.
Yeah. To throw it back to You Ain't Lying 2 years ago, Shooter Shoot.
That's right, Shooter Shoot.
Yeah, and Datto is the epitome of that, and I'm all for it. So yeah. I appreciate you having me on. Nice change of pace. We'll save all of our hot takes for later this week in the big show. There's plenty to talk about.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, man, another 0-0 draw. We got Monterey on Thursday at, I think, 10:15 our time. That'll be interesting. Yeah. Night. And then Sunday at Gillette, and then yet another NFL stadium against Caleb Porter's current shit show that is the New England Revolution. I would be fine, and I don't know that it's going to happen, and knock on wood. I am 100% knocking on wood that if we just house them and really put Caleb on the hot seat, that would be fun to watch because that man deserves it.
I want points. So, yes, yeah. I really don't want us to drop any points. Still undefeated in the league. I think one of seven teams in the East that still hasn't lost. You know, there's probably 4 points we've left out there, Nate, but it's early. As long as you're not falling too far behind as you're trying to juggle these early competitions, like, yep. So far, so good, especially when you're retooling a roster. Like, there's, you know, it's a lot of shit going on right now. So,
yeah, that there is.
Yeah, I give the team credit, and they're still going through growing pains, and they're still going through trying to get to know each other. And, you know, they're the comeback on Sunday to New England's going to be tough because that is not an easy travel day down to Monterey. You know, it's a little bit more lengthy than most trips. So. Well,
down to Monterey, then right back, time zone, altitude change, right back to Cincy, then to New England.
I would hope that they just go straight there.
Yeah, you and me both. I don't know that it'll happen because I don't know how you get any training in, but I don't know that they do train. It might just be a couple days of recovery and you just go figure it out from there. That might make a lot more sense, but yeah. Cool, man. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you in a couple nights. You know, we'll leave it at that.
Yep, appreciate it. Everyone, thanks for listening to Grade A, and as we always say, Prost.